Welcome at the Order of Time. Today, I would like to talk to you about energy and control. We know all of life is energy. Everything we see, every material thing is in form of energy. The time itself is a flow of energy. It's a flow in the ether, a power controlling all that energy, giving it its order. We have this as the creation, a game of energy. And there's also control, a natural control over that energy. There is the sun and the moon turning everything into a conditioned order. This game of order is not hell. It is the natural harmony of plants and animals living in paradise. Many people see this not this way, because they look with different eyes. They see it from the control of achieving a certain advantage, of filling your stomach. We say it's a lesser world, it's full of animals, and they all want to eat each other, and it's really a kind of game which is very dangerous. You can be eaten by insects or by predators, or even by your fellow human beings. They can devour you also, slowly killing you, first taking your life away and then throwing you into the gutter if you do not defend yourself and if you do not prove yourselves a better control than they are. And that would be hell on earth. You always are in strife, you always are in conflict, in opposition for that control, and there's never an end to that misery. So what is the reality? How about this energy and control? Because the energy is of nature controlled. And we oppose this nature with a philosophy of human superiority, in which we have a different type of control. We say, okay, we control the world, because the world of its own will eat us, will devour us, will turn us into dumb apes who are not in control at all, who are subject to all kinds of misery, because one is not of any knowledge. So what is the truth and what is a lie concerning this world of ours? Yesterday I saw a movie. It's called the Celestine Prophecy. And it is about a man, a teacher, who hears from a friend that there's a few scrolls discovered in Peru with a certain prophecy on it. And that prophecy contains 9 insights. And these 9 insights, they constitute a basic process of self-realization, in which one discovers what it is to be in harmony with that natural energy, to be connected, and to be positive about control. Not so much the control over others as the control in self-realization as a form of submission to the original control that is natural, and not something thought of, or something planned, or something imposed. No, this is the control that is there naturally, that which is a miracle, which is a form of connectedness. So, in that context, in the context of that story, the story was not so important. It was about these wisdoms, these insights. In association with this concept of connectedness, there was mentioned a certain concept which is called synchronicity. This is of relevance to the order of time. Synchronicity is is things happening at the same time, literally. And this happening at the same time is a mystery, because it proves, at a certain moment, it proves that you are connected with the people around you. In your own environment, you notice that things fit together, like the fingers of a hand who seem to be separate, but suddenly you become aware that there's a hand moving those fingers. They are... If you are a finger and I'm a finger, then there can be synchronicity of all fingers moving at the same time a certain way, as if there's one hand moving those different fingers. So that is synchronicity. We are fingers of the hand of God moving us into an harmonious grip, a grip that is His, a grip that is goodness and love and connectedness and happiness and bliss, and it's firm. It's not an illusion in the sense of having a temporary success, you're a winner, and the next day you're nothing anymore, a loser of no importance. Because, yeah, winners have to be losers. And if you lose the winning, well, maybe then you are the real winner. So the real advantage is in the realization of this connectedness in the moment, this synchronicity, this unplanned meditative state in which one doesn't control each other, but finds the control of that one hand in the beyond, of that one Lord or God or mystery or connectedness. So that is the reason why we speak of an alternative time consciousness at this site. This site is associated with this energy, this which is in harmony or in conflict. And I take it one step further, because in the story of the Celestine prophecy, we see 9 insights, and the joke at the end of the movie is, well, the synchronicity of the last scene in the aeroplane. The man looks at a folder, some advertisement for 10 ways of having success in life, and reads it and thinks, oh, this is nothing, this is a commercial trick or something, and he tears it up, and he throws that one piece on which the 10 is written on a magazine he was reading called Insights, and then he saw 10 insights. So the synchronicity of the moment showed him that there might be 10 insights instead of 9, because there were 9 scrolls with 9 insights, and the highest insight would be to be at the top of evolution, to have attained this marvelous togetherness in the original energy, which is the control from the inside and not so much the control from the outside. So that was the joke of the movie. There were possibly more insights than 9. Of course, there's an endless variety of insights. And the Bhagavad Gita is 700 insights, and the Bhagavad Purana is 18,000 insights, all relevant mantras, all meaningful to this connectedness, to this original love of knowledge, this philognosy. We know the term gnosis as a term connecting the Christianity, as the original mind of Christ, who's not so much running after the Ten Commandments all the time, who's not so much running after the routines of the church. That's not Christ. It's not wrong to have a routine. It's not wrong to have the commandments. What is of relevance is to be in touch with Christ all the time. And to be in touch with Christ all the time is what you call gnosis. Yeah? It's the spiritual core of Christianity. That is what saves us all the time. Not to be a Catholic or a Protestant. That might be a war in Ireland just as much as it is a war in Iraq between Shiites and Sunnites. because of the ego of the religion. So religion can be a super ego in conflict. Moral systems declaring each other crazy and criminal, and then unbelievably ending up in fighting and killing each other, which is totally ludicrous. Because that is never the intention of the original Christ or the original Muhammad, the original Krishna or the original Buddha. They are all that one gnosis of being connected to that original energy, to that original harmony of nature, to that original moment. And what we are doing now is sharing in this moment, not so much in the name of Christ or in the name of Krishna or in the name of Buddha, but more in the name of gnosis, this spiritual knowledge of which I at this side say it must be philognosis. Philo is the Greek word for love. Philo. Gnosis is the word for knowledge. And gnosis, in this sense, in the Christian sense of being connected, irrespective of the church, irrespective even the religion, is the love that we need. So the love for gnosis, the love that the gnosis, the love for the gnosis that connects us all, irrespective of the religion even, whether it's Jesus or Buddha, whether it's your guru, whether it's your mother or your father or your brother or your friends, that connectedness is what counts. That connectedness in the sense of that synchronicity, that sharing of the moment in which everything works together mysteriously, like moved by the hand of God. Everything is in perfect harmony if we realize this original hand of control over that energy. So I agree with the Celestine prophecy that we are an evolution of realizing this original nature. This is the emancipation process that we are in. And it is presented as something unique, as something to find in secret scrolls, and there would be a whole story of vested interests of the religion and the state order, the political order, who feel a threat to their authority, to that momentary connectedness which supersedes all the outside authorities, and they can't have it, so that must be repressed and persecuted and incarcerated and even killed. There's guns fired, and people are incarcerated, and so it's an adventure, but it's a bit of a black and a white presentation, of course, of what's really going on. There is this conflict in culture, but it's not that simple of good and bad. Good, being good and being bad. We have this opposition between nature and culture, and the culture tends to be political and religious, full of ego and falsehood, and the nature seems to be all good and paradise, but we know it is not perfectly true this way. It is a simplistic presentation, of course, of a very complex matter. You could just as well turn it all around and say, okay, the only thing that lasts is the religion and the political commitment, and we have to be serious in maintaining our memory of this Christ or this tradition. You need to be in order and you need to be good. It's also true, of course. And nature, at the other hand, just as well, you may consider bad and unorganized and full of strife. It's the Darwinistic view, the survival of the fittest, and we don't want to want to land in that kind of hell, to be fighting for your life constantly, with nobody really caring about you. Because animals, well, they tend to be indifferent. They tend to be, without compassion. They mercilessly eat you because they are hungry, or simply because you're a good host to them. Some insects and bacteria and viruses, etc. You're eaten alive eventually by nature, so why would you cherish something that is a real threat to you? No, you need this culture, this house, which is a safe haven, and which protects you against all this evil of nature. So, of course, there are two positions, and the story is not that important. The story of the Celestine prophecy is just a black and white presentation of good and bad, and you know, the Hollywood schedule of fighting evil for the sake of good. Okay, that's how the story goes, but that's not really important. That's just the framework to present you with this essential philosophy of synchronicity and connectedness. That connectedness of in the spirit of gnosis, that in the spirit of the moment, me at this moment talking to you is still sharing the moment, even though this is a file on the internet at which you listen at this file and you hear me talking, but I'm not talking to you at the same moment. The moment I speak now is not the moment when you listen, but still we are connected because I refer to this moment, which is exactly the same realization you have at your moment. I might be doing something else when you listen to this, just as well as you might be doing something else when I'm speaking this. In modern time, we shouldn't try to control each other anymore as speakers and listeners. So I'm not waiting for your applause or your reward or your the money you might pay for this, because I don't expect any money. I say this is gratitude. I celebrate the moment in gratitude for the opportunity offered to me to speak in defense of this moment that we share now, even when you listen now, even when I'm doing at this moment that you listen something else. In half an hour I will do something else. In half an hour you might be listening to this. So we're not connected in the moment, one could say, but still we are connected in the moment because we refer to that moment. This moment, this gnosis, this connectedness in Christ, this connectedness in Christ and in Krishna is greater than my or your ego. This is not for the sake of the ego that I talk now. This is for the sake of this philognosis, for this love of gnosis. Because gnosis can be a book in a bookcase. It can be the first centuries of Christianity, after which the scrolls of Nag Hammadi ended up in the cave, in the earth, to be forgotten, because the church didn't welcome those insights into the original order of the spirit, to the original insights of Christian order. We are in this connectedness, realizing that there is a need to realize what Ranish, I heard a lecture yesterday of Ranish, Osho Ranish, which is also a great teacher of meditation, concerning the subject of energy and control. And he says, well, don't listen to my words. Don't listen to my words. Listen to what's behind it, to the silence behind it. It's not, I cannot express it in words. We are connected in the moment. There's, in fact, nothing else but that moment. And that is not really communication. It is not the words that I speak. It is from which I speak or for that what I'm speaking. It is the communion of sharing this moment, of this synchronicity, of this positive realization of that energy, which is not controlling, not to the concept of me trying to control you as a speaker, because I'm not even sure that you are there or are listening at all, certainly not at the moment, because I'm just speaking into a microphone now. Nor is it certain that you can control me as an audience, which audiences tend to do by applauding and paying money and having opening times and a certain calendar. at which the performance would happen. This is not the case now. So we are free from this control of me controlling you and you controlling me. We just appreciate life and celebrate the truth of this gnosis, of this connectedness that we need to have to indeed, like the Celestine prophecy says, to evolve into a better mankind. There's something happening in the world now. We had our modern time in which we discovered our ego. We had our postmodern time in which we became cynical because nothing would save the world anymore. It was all like Humpty Dumpty fallen apart into a billion egos, and nobody knows anymore what the order is that would connect us. But that order has never changed. That order was always there to cure from your postmodern cynicism, which is more a psychic problem of depression, because you lost your vision of this evolution that we are in. We are evolving as a mankind, but also individually, into a better state, which simply leads us back to that original order. The Hindus say, well, this is Kali Yuga, we lost it, we are ego-tripping. But that's not so bad. We believe in the cyclic nature of time, and we will return to Kali Yuga again, to Satya Yuga again, from this Kali Yuga and this age of quarrel, political strife. We will return to that original order of Satya, of loving the truth of the natural order, in which we are all equal beings, even though we have different identities of service and of age, of status, of civil status, being married or single, or being old or withdrawn. Irrespective of these outer differences, we are innerly connected and equal. And that is the only thing that is sure for us. Because this game is dynamic. We may change roles, we may change forms. Now you are a man, tomorrow you are a woman. And now you're young, tomorrow you're old. So this is a game of appearances. But it's awe-inspiring and exhilarating. It's fantastic. It's blissful if we realize this connectedness in gnosis, in this synchronicity, in this knowing of everything happening at the same time. This moment, everything happens at the same time. Even 5 minutes later or 5 minutes early, this is the same eternal truth. We are connected in this. And we should realize that we are those fingers of that hand moved together by that original Godhead, by that original grip, by that original nature, by the original control. And the opposition there might be, the conflict there might be between a culture and nature, will be dissolved if we realize that there is an evolution, that there is a culture, that there is a culture of knowledge and gnosis, not unlike the Vedic culture of the previous yugas, that is inspiring us, that is leading us back to where we came from. So we are on an ego trip. Modern time is much of an ego trip, a political ego trip, but also a super ego trip of religion, in which we find religions as political parties trying to rule the world, which never works, of course. Never will any religion rule the world, nor any political party. You're just strangers in paradise. The animals are not concerned about political parties, nor about religions. They have only one political party, and that's the party of paradise. They have only one religion, and that is the religion of a loving Mother Nature, married to Father Time, as he is, not as we make it culturally, but as he is of his own nature. So we at the Order of Time speak of time consciousness. A consciousness of time we find in nature, and a consciousness of time we find in culture, in the culture. And really, there are fanatics in politics who subscribe to this, but destructive. They say nature is good, culture is bad, and then you are a fundamentalist. You prefer nature. But you can just as well say, nature is bad, it's all animals and germs and viruses eating you. Nature is bad, culture is good, culture is in service of that purity of not being eaten. And then you are a capitalist. You are too much in the sphere of control and against nature. So who's right, the capitalist or the fundamentalist? Well, the philognostic simply acknowledges these enemies in the present-day war in the world, the war between capitalists and fundamentalists. The philognostic recognizes these parties simply as representatives of a certain field of action, as we discussed before. There's not a good and a bad. There's just different functions in our society of serving the individual interest in the concrete manner or in the ideal manner. So the same way, we cannot really separate the natural consciousness of time from the cultural consciousness of time. The ego trip consists of a culture that strayed away, that estranged from that original nature. But if you lead the culture back to nature, we do not skip the entire culture, of course. Why should we? We can return to that original order of having calendars to the moon, even solar calendars, as the Julian calendar was also originally to the order of the moon, and clocks that tick to the sun, like we always did with water clocks, who were set to the regularity of the sun. This is normal routine. For thousands and thousands of years, we've been setting clocks to sundials, water clocks, and suddenly they became mechanical. So what? That's even better. A mechanical clock is better, because water clocks, water evaporates, are imprecise. Mechanical clocks are precise, so mechanical clocks are better. But something went wrong. Something went wrong because we realized that nature is irregular, and clocks are regular, so nature is bad and clocks are good. And there you have this conflict between nature and culture. But originally, this conflict was not there. Originally, we had our clocks as tempometers, clocks following the astrarium indication of nature. Nature is one big astrarium clock, a clock formed by stars and planets and the moon. So this original clock, this astrarium clock, was the model for us, our original water clocks, to realize the original nature. And the culture to be in respect of that was the Vedic culture, the old Hindu culture. The Hindus of today are not really Vedic anymore. They have these books, the Purana and all these big books. Rinesh calls them ugly books. And indeed, they are heavy stuff. And we should discuss this also some other time, why these books would be ugly. Because still they contain essential wisdom you cannot miss. So it's a challenge. But with all this cultural involvement in time, we realized that we, in the old days, were proper Hindus in India, in line with the natural order. The culture wouldn't be strange to nature. These days, Kali Yuga, as the Hindus call it, we are not really Hindus anymore, because we do not follow these precepts anymore of recognizing Krishna as the original time of the celestial sky, the sun, and the moon. We don't recognize this anymore. So we are not real Hindus in the sense of being of the Vedic culture. The Purana is not really read in India. And one of our missions is to reintroduce these scriptures to reinstall that Vedic culture. We know it's Kali Yuga, and we know it takes another yuga to restore this. After Kali Yuga, happily enough, we are cyclic and we return to Satya Yuga again. And some start now already, and some they postpone it. They form the opposition in culture, and they continue with that war between fundamentalists and capitalists. But we Gnostics, connected in this synchronicity, in this communion, we don't care much about the conflict between the fundamentalist and the capitalist. We are of this culture of knowledge, of this culture which is in harmony with nature, which is in touch with that connectedness. The discipline we call yoga, but the knowledge about it we call gnosis. And I say, be philognostics. Love this gnosis, because otherwise it's just a book in the bookcase. Love this gnosis. Do really practice this. That is the importance, not just to have an idea, but to practice this natural consciousness, this original order of nature. And thus be of the proper control. Not be afraid of order anymore, but be enlightened by that order. To not to be in conflict with that energy, but to be in touch with the original harmony and bliss and consciousness in that energy. That is the purpose of the order of time and philognosy. I thank you for your attention.